Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Medi-Assist Healthcare Services Limited earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Neeraj Didwani from Medi-Assist Healthcare. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon and a very warm welcome to each one of you to Medi-Assist Healthcare Services Limited's earnings conference call for Q1 FY25. The results of the company, the press release and the investor presentation have been uploaded to the exchanges and also to our website and distributed to our mailing list. Please note that any forward-looking statements are to be relied upon based on your own judgment, and all financials and operating numbers discussed on the call are unaudited and or management estimates, and hence investors should refer only to annual audited numbers. Without further ado, I would now like to hand over the call to Dr. Vikram Chhatwal, Chairman and Whole-Time Director of Medi-Assist.
Thank you, Neeraj, and a warm welcome to all our shareholders and other participants joining us from India and from other parts of the world. With me, I have our CEO, Satish Didigu, our CFO, who you are all meeting for the first time, Sandeep Daga. He joined us recently and comes with 25 years of experience across leading corporations in India. And of course, all of you know Neeraj Didwani, who just introduced himself to you and heads our investor relations. As we present the financial results for the quarter FY25 today, for the first quarter, I take a moment to reflect on the health insurance sector in India. As you are aware, the health insurance segment remains the largest within the general health insurance or the general insurance industry pool, and the group health business continues to lead the way. As a company, Medi-Assist continues to see tailwinds with the regulator in carrying out the mandate to make health insurance and the health insurance experience a satisfactory one. As we think of all of the tailwinds of insurance penetration and adoption, it continues to have a positive impact on both the health insurance industry and the TPA industry, or the third-party administrator industry, to which we belong. Our focus continues on customer centricity and improving the service proposition that delivers a smoother and enhanced experience for all stakeholders, and with specific reference to the policyholder. Our efforts have been aligned with our commitment to fostering a customer-first culture, which has always been the heart of our business operations. As we move into the company performance, I will hand you all over to our Chief Executive Officer, Satish Didigu, who will take you through the company performance over the first quarter of FY25.
Thank you, Dr. Vikram, and a warm welcome to all Medi-Assist shareholders and other participants. Thank you for joining this call. We have delivered another quarter of strong performance in an environment that's under pressure due to reductions in corporate headcounts and increase in medical inflation. We're excited about several initiatives we have ongoing to improve policyholder experience and to deliver more value to our principals. The business highlights for the first quarter of FY25 were as follows. The total premium under management administered is 5,969 crores as on 30th of June, a growth of 22.4% year-on-year. Of this, group premiums are 5,422 crores, resulting in a growth of 19.6% year-on-year. And the retail premiums have grown at a 60.1% year-on-year to 547 crores. Market share in terms of health insurance premiums administered, which is across group and retail, is 21.3% as on 30th of June 2024, demonstrating a growth of 40 basis points year-on-year. The group segment market share is at 30.2% against the 30.4% last year, and the retail segment market share has moved up to 5.5% from the 4.1% last year. While we will discuss the financials a little later on this call, a couple of highlights that I want to bring to your notice. We've improved retention of our group accounts, which is now at 94% compared to 92% last year, and this now includes the entire portfolio of MediAssist, Medvantage, and Raksha. 17 insurers today use our provider network exclusively, and a testament to the value provided by MediAssist to drive cashless utilization and control medical inflation. Mayfair WeCare, our international benefits business, onboarded policyholders from India with overseas health covers, thereby adding a new segment of retail beneficiaries to its portfolio. With respect to some of the technology highlights for the company, we facilitated over 19,000 expedited discharges through our Raksha Prime program, a program that used advanced AI and ML and predictive models, powering bill estimation and allowing patients to walk away even before the bills are generated. We've delivered nearly a 2x growth in fraud prevention and savings delivered to insurers, again driven by higher utilization of AI and ML models. We've completed our integration and processed live claims through NSCX platform and have integrated with 17 insurance companies as of 30th of June. And our technology and operations significantly enhanced to enable and support our insurer partners to be fully in compliance with the latest IRDAI circulars around policyholder experience. I'll now hand over the call to Sandeep Daga, our CFO, to give you a highlight on the financial aspects of the business.
Thank you, Satish, and a warm welcome to all the participants and the shareholders. To give the summary of the financial results for the first quarter of financial year 25, our total income is 172.9 crore, which turns out to be an 18.3% YoY growth over the corresponding quarter of the previous year. The revenue from the contract with customers, excluding other income, which we call it as operating revenue, is 167.7 crore, which grew by almost 19.1% YoY over the corresponding quarter of the previous year. Revenue from the contracts with customers included 9.3% from the government business and 4.7% from our international benefits business. The EBITDA during the quarter, excluding other income, which we call as operating EBITDA, is 35.2 crore, which resulted into a growth of 57.4% YoY and a margin of 21.0% on the operating revenue. Profit for the period is 19.1 crore, which is 7.1% growth year-on-year basis and a margin of 11% on the total income. Excluding the impact of the incremental amortization on some of the technology investments which the company made, our PAT would have been 21.3 crore, which is equivalent to 12.3% basis points. Some of the key highlights on the balance sheets and the operating matrices as on first quarter are as under. Net cash balance in the books 270.2 crore. Net worth as on 30th of June is 503.2 crore. Return on the net worth is 3.8% for Q1, which is equivalent to 15.2% on annualized basis. ROCE, return on capital employed, is 4.6% for Q1, which is equivalent to 18.4% on annualized basis. Our revenue per average headcount, excluding the government contract, is 0.33 million for the quarter, which is equivalent to 1.32 million annualized. Thank you, and I now hand over the call back to Neeraj.
Thank you, Dr. Vikram, Satish, and Sandeep. We can now open the call for questions from the participants.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We take our first question from the line of Chintan Seth from Giri Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity and congrats to the team for the great set of numbers. My first question is on, the PM growth seems to be pretty strong. And I understand the revenue growth lagging behind premium growth as we have been riding due to the timing issue. But if you can, just highlight, if you can, on what is the contract liabilities on the our books, so that we can get some sense on how we should look at it, because yields are not comparative when we compare with premium growth in the Q1.
Thank you, Chintan. This is Satish. Thank you for your question. Thank you for being there. So we had reported a contract liability as of March 31st is 220 odd crores, which has gone up by a further 45 crores as of 30th of June. So like you rightly pointed out, there's a significant timing impact also in the way we book our revenues and hence the lag between the premium growth and the revenue booking.
Correct. And the margins, despite, lower bookings, we have delivered a decent margin print. How do you see any guidance change, or do you see second half recovering? Because as you highlighted in the opening remark, there is a slowness in hiring. How do you see that environment changing as we stand today? If you can provide some light on it.
Sure, Chintan. I think we've always maintained, even in the past, that we've had multiple years of 23 to 24% as our steady state margins in the past, and we've acquired multiple companies in the last 18 months, and the synergies have started kicking in by Q4 of last year, as you've seen from our financial numbers. Happy to report that the integration and sort of realizing the synergies is continuing to be on track. And hence, we've delivered a 21% in Q1 with all of the integrations that are still ongoing.
Right.
And of course, the focus is on getting back to steady state margins at the earliest.
Oh, sure. And any outlook on the premium growth? Has things started improving on the hiring front? And we see in faster growth, or in the anyways, you are growing faster. It is heartening to see the retail portfolio growing at 60% this quarter. Anything you want to highlight? How are our strategies playing out, and what are we intend to do over the next couple of years to scale our retail portfolio as well?
So I think we've clearly mentioned multiple times that the retail is a focus, and we work with about 14 insurers now on the retail portfolio, while we work with 28 insurers, on the group portfolio, and with a fairly equal representation from both the public sector and the private sector, insurers. Mm-hmm. Of course, some of our retail growth is also attributed to the acquisition of Raksha, with a significant retail exposure, and gives us significant access to north and certain parts of India. Right. So we'll continue to stay focused on retail, and it continues to be a growth engine as we move forward.
Sure, I'll jump back. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prakash Kapadia from Spark PMS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. A couple of questions from my end. You know, broadly, if I were to take a slightly longer term view on health insurance, GDPI growth, all of us have seen, you know, post-COVID, the awareness has increased and, you know, it can continue to grow at 17-18% over the next few years. Just wanted to get, you know, your understanding, what will it take, you know, for higher growth at our end, 20-25% kind of growth? Will it be market share gains, assuming, you know, industry grows at 17-18%? In the group business, is it going to be retail business contribution increasing from year on in our mix? That's the first question. Secondly, you know, of the employee cost, if you could give us some sense of, you know, what is fixed and variable payout in terms of the breakup. And lastly, what are the technology cost which we've done last year and what kind of a capex we are estimating in technology this year? These are my three questions.
Appreciate that. This is Vikram. Let me kick off the first part of the question and then I'll hand it over to my colleagues to answer the other. I think if you look at the intrinsic tailwinds of growth, our business continues to benefit from the group business. And we continue, while there has been some softening in hiring, we believe that that will, over the period of time, come back to normal levels of hiring. And we continue to stay focused as that being the main pillar of our growth story. In support of what our CEO just said to you, the retail remains an integral part of the growth story. And as you have seen in the company's performance, we have increased the number of companies and insurers we work with in managing their retail portfolio, which is 14 insurers, as Satish shared with you. Given all of the tailwinds, our focus on the corporate book, where, yes, a part of our growth story will always be accretion of logos or customers and market share, as you pointed out, clearly is an integral part of the growth story for us. The retail participation and partnerships that we have with various insurance companies and their various products that are sold continues to remain an integral part. The third, as Satish in his opening remarks gave you, is our capability from a fraud, waste and abuse prevention perspective, and that has become an integral component of what is driving both insurers and customers to continue to work with us, as is seen in lower churn in the business from 92% to 94%, so the churn has gone from 8% to 6%, and greater allocations on the retail portfolio given our length and breadth and quality of network. And as Satish pointed out to you, 17 insurers that use our hospital networks and our contracts, all supporting not only the length and breadth of our reach, but our ability to prevent fraud, waste and abuse in the insurance ecosystem. To the second half of your questions on employee cost and some of the key technology initiatives that the company has taken over this period, as Satish introduced the idea of Raksha Prime and various other technologies related to fraud, waste and abuse, I will hand over to Satish to answer these questions for you.
Thank you, Dr. Vikram. So just to get back to our employee benefits historical, for many years now, our employee benefits expense as a percentage of revenue have hovered between 40 and 41%. despite our volumes more than doubling over the last 3 years. That's backed on the technology investments that we make and the kind of integrations that we've been able to build with the rest of the industry. You would see a marginal increase in this quarter compared to the last year, the same quarter, because it has all of the headcount of all of the acquired, entities. And even then, it's just about 100 basis points increase on the basis of the revenue. And the reason we are able to maintain that is because of the investments in tech. So that's on the employee benefits side of it. And from a technology and investments perspective, we have a very strong tech-first approach to solving problems. We have our platforms that we build today are run at an industry scale. Last year, we processed over 8 million claims, of which almost 55% were outpatient claims, right? And delivering almost 65% cashless in inpatient, 45% cashless in outpatient at a scale for the entire industry. So some of our technology platforms today are also leased by insurance companies to run their operations. And apart from that, we have made fair bit of investments in data sciences and in building AI and ML teams inside the organization with two real North Star metrics that we look at now from an insurance industry perspective. One is how do you improve the policyholder experience, which is also what the regulatory authorities sort of pushing the whole industry for. And second is how do you improve outcomes for our insurer, partners by doing a far superior work of preventing fraud, waste, and abuse. And again, both of these significantly determined by our digitization and AI and ML initiatives. So this is where our technology focus is right now.
Okay. Satish, if you could quantify the CapEx on technology for this year versus last year, because last year, as you said, you had some of the acquisitions, so will it be higher, lower? And on the employee cost, yes, we've managed it very well. So any sense or color you could give us on fixed and variable pay, that'll be helpful. Thank you.
So I think we fairly tightly managed operation today, and I don't think we have any specific breakups that we provide on the employee benefits, and it includes all of our leadership costs today. Right? And so we have, I think typically about 4% of our revenues have gone into CapEx. It includes all of our, data centers and investments in technology. There'll be a marginal, increase in CapEx as and when needed, because we see this as an opportunity to build some disruptive technologies in the whole, AML space and to sort of deliver on the policyholder experience mandate that the regulatory authority has actually set for us.
Sure. That is helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Madhukar Ladha from Nuvama Wealth Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, everyone. So just a quick few questions from me. I wanted to just get that number right. So 45 crores is the increase in deferred revenues in this quarter, and the same number for last quarter was about 15 crores. Is that right?
No, I think as a snapshot number on the balance sheet, last year closing number was about 220 crores is the deferred, deferred of the contract liability. 220 has gone to 265.
And so there's an increase of 45 in this quarter. What was the increase in the last quarter? Is that 15 crores number right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, because I had it in my notes. I wanted to just
confirm. To be exact, the number was 12 crores, as I understand.
Understood. Okay, got it. Great. So And then the next question is, what is this tech cost amortization? And there's an impact of about 25 million on the PAT. And why should that be excluded? Why is that an extraordinary? I wanted to just get a sense of that. And next question is, what is driving our improvement in retail market share? I'm sorry if I missed some bit of the call, so maybe this is a repetition. It would be helpful if you can just answer these questions. Thanks.
Let me start from the business side of it. On retail, it continues to be a focus area. And if you recollect some of our past conversations, we have the platforms, we have the network, and we have the digital integrations that are sort of giving us the ability to win more and more of the retail business. That's how we now have retail business with about half the insurers already. And part of the growth on retail, Madhukar, has already also come in from our Raksha acquisition. Raksha has significant retail presence, and it was one of the reasons why we looked at Raksha, specifically to plug some gaps in our geographic presence in the retail story. So this is sort of both combined leading to retail growth.
Got it.
And on the tech side, I will let.
On the tech side, yeah.
Give you the numbers, but I think just to give you a color of what we've done, I think in the past, most of our tech for claims processing is something that we had actually built out as per some of the updates that we had shared with you. So I think the incremental investments are actually going into significantly acquiring or improving on our AI and ML capabilities. So while we've added a fairly capable data sciences team, and we are sort of we've delivered a couple of very interesting capabilities, as I talked about in the opening remarks. While the industry has a target to improve the speed with which discharges are processed, today, using our technology, we have let about 19,000 patients leave hospital on the day of discharge, even before the bills were printed. And this is the predictive technology that we've built, which allowed the hospitals and the members to estimate an out-of-pocket expense to a fair bit of accuracy and actually simplify the entire discharge process. So that's the work that we're doing towards improving our policyholders' experience. The second piece that has come out as a very positive outcome in the last 3 or 4 months is the amount, the rupee value that we are delivering back as savings to insurers on account of preventing fraud, waste, and abuse has grown 2x over just the last 3 to 4 months, right, on a monthly run rate. So these are the investments that we made on AI and ML, but we saw some significant gaps in the way the industry data is sort of coming into us to enable this or improve this AI and ML accuracy even further, and then expand the scope to 100% of our business. So this is where we've acquired some tech assets to improve our digitization capabilities, convert all the unstructured data to structured data. So that's the incremental investment we've made, Madhukar, because we believe that's the right thing to do to deliver on both these promises. I'll let Sandeep talk about the specifics on the numbers.
Thank you, Satish. Madhukar, as we have been making significant investments in the technology projects, which includes commitment of resources, procurement of licenses, and building an IP, which will help us to meet the regulator's intent in times to come. As far as the quantification of these IT-led investments is concerned, the total spend during Q1 happens to be roughly around 2.3 CR, and another leg of the transaction is sitting in the finance cost. We would have noted that the total finance charges has gone up by roughly around 80 odd lakhs. It is finally on account of the unwinding of the interest component on the liability which has been created towards procurement of such software licenses. This has been done because some of the licenses we have procured are on deferred payment terms, and hence the same got accounted in the books and compliance with Ind AS 109, which talks about financial instruments.
Understood. Understood. Just one more thing, the revenue split you have between non-government business, government and international business, can you give me the comparable split for last year Q1?
We'll get that to you, Madhukar, in a minute, but we'll be largely in line with this space. There's no significant movements across group and media.
Got it. I'll come back in the queue. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, sir. We take the next question from the line of Rishi Jhunjhunwala from IIFL Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks for the opportunity. Just a couple of questions more on the industry side. Firstly, you've been highlighting in your presentation about integration with NHCX platform, and you've started processing live claims also there. Just wanted to understand, how is that platform fixing in the entire, you know, ecosystem? In the sense, is it taking some work and effort away from us, and as a result could actually be deflationary to our addressable opportunity, or you know, is it actually, you know, adding any other you know, potentially untapped markets? How is it playing out? If you can explain a little bit on NHCX, that will be helpful.
Sure, Rishi, thank you. Satish here. In some ways, we've always had the equivalent at MediAssist for many years now. Today, NHCX today delivers on one promise, which is to create a standard exchange platform using which hospitals, which are the providers, can actually send a payload of information to the payers, that are the insurers. And then again, payers can send a response back to the providers in a common exchange platform. So think of it as a hub through which all of these messages are passing through. Of course, right now, NHCX is live, has some limited products from some of the insurers on it. But if you look at our own numbers that we have presented, over 82% of our cashless today is already received electronically by us through various equivalent exchange platforms that we already integrate with. There are industry exchange platforms that we already integrate with. 82% of our cashless is already electronic. Our hope is that when NHCX comes in, eventually across all the exchanges in NHCX, we'll get to 100% electronic exchange of information between us and the hospitals. It will certainly lead to incremental improvements in our operational efficiencies, but it will be a substantial move forward in the policyholder experience, because this whole aspect of hospital sending you an email and emails having attachments, you having to read them, hopefully will sort of go away, you know, over the years to come. So that, I think that's the limited extent to which we see NHCX sort of playing. But if NHCX were to become successful, and if the whole industry were to sort of move to a standardized, you know, exchange, and that will sort of hopefully become the base for expansion of health insurance benefits, and hopefully the insurance for all by 2047. We see this as one of the building blocks of how the country will move to digitize and use electronic workflows. So I think we see this as an enabling thing for health insurance penetration.
But do you think this could potentially pose a risk to the realization we get from the payers?
So Rishi, I think these are somewhat unrelated topics, because, you know, it's much like a stock exchange, because the decision making is with the party and not with the exchange. So we all plug in as insurers, as TPAs, as hospitals. We perform our respective workloads and what we need to deliver. And it is a way to sort of common size and standardize the messaging across all of the actors in the industry.
So I think in summary, Rishi, I think we remain as a TPA neutral, and will benefit from the accretion that a platform like this will have from and its impact on insurance penetration. From a realization perspective, we see this as being neutral to our business.
Understood. Thank you. And just second question on this Health Master circular that came out last quarter. Just in terms of, you know, implementation, do you think you know, it could be followed to the T, and some of the you know, the guidelines which are there, which includes performance of TPAs to be monitored and all. I mean, how do you see that playing out in a practical world?
So Rishi, I think one should, I mean, at least this is our view, we should look at the intent behind the circular as creating a North Star metric of policyholder experience in the entire health insurance industry to make sure that there is a lot more penetration, there is a lot more population opting for health insurance. So we see, we take that as the intent behind the circular. Of course, there are operational questions on the implementation that are being debated today, you know, across the insurers and the TPAs, and there is work being done. But I think the entire industry, including us, we have taken this in a very positive spirit to say that what is it that we can do to ensure that the policyholder experience becomes the North Star metric for everybody. So we have always held ourselves in turnaround times to fairly high degree of standards. In fact, we publish our real-time averages of cashless processing, pre-authorization processing, and claims processing on our website. So you actually see the average today, average for the last 7 days, 30 days. So we have since made operational changes to get nearly as close to 100% as possible on some of the operational parameters the circular would like us to sort of get to on the processing side of it. And we are working with insurers on some of the other process changes that are focused on policyholder experience.
Okay, so just to wrap up, sorry. So on the flip side, can it potentially lead to market share consolidation given that smaller players are potentially not capable of handling these kind of stringent guidelines on the TPA side as well?
I think the ask is stringent, and I think time will tell. I think we are well prepared, and you know, we are forging full speed ahead from an intent perspective to be fully compliant, and we are almost there.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sarang Sanil from RW Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Good evening, team. Thank you for the opportunity. So FY23 Raksha revenue, I believe, was around 65 crores. And this is about 16 crores a quarter. Considering that there was some customer churn in Raksha post-acquisition, even taking revenue of 7 to 8 crores would essentially push our revenue quarterly growth ex of Raksha to about 13%. Industry definitely would have grown much faster than this, I believe. Am I missing something here?
Hi, thanks for the question. Sarang, we've consistently maintained that acquiring an entity and retaining its business are two different things. So what happens is once we buy a Raksha or a Medvantage, immediately on next day basis, the responsibility of retaining that business for which we've paid is on us. So we don't differentiate what is an organic or an inorganic premium or a revenue contribution, because all the efforts required to retain that business, integrate that operations, shift them to our technology platform, that completely comes to us as a heavy lifting operational effort. And so we do not differentiate this. That's why we've consistently maintained that overall we have a go-to-market in terms of what kind of growth and what kind of market share we want to maintain in the industry. And that's where the premium growth and revenue growth for the quarter are quite healthy and satisfactory.
All right, got it, sir. So my second question is, has the integration of Raksha been completed? And also, is there any particular quarter where you give a wage hike to the employees?
So Raksha integration, typically we've always maintained that given the annual renewal nature of the health insurance policies, and given the way the revenues are deferred out over the 12-month period of each policy, typically we have about a 4-quarter effort to fully integrate all of the business that we acquire. So we, Raksha came into our business in Q3 of last year. In another quarter or so, we expect to fully complete the integration. And of course, there's a merger process that is running and it will take, due course. In due course of time, that will sort of get completed. The wage hikes historically have been in Q2 or Q3, depending on the year.
Sure, sir. Okay. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Varun Gajaria from Boring AMC. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for taking my question. I'm sorry if this question has already been asked, but what is the revenue split from our recent acquisition, Medvantage, Raksha, and Mayfair? I suppose Mayfair also has been consolidated right, in this quarter.
So the question was not very clear, but are you asking us for the revenues from the acquisitions?
Yeah. In this quarter specifically.
I think about little less than 5% is from Mayfair because it's a 60% owned entity. Like Neeraj answered in the previous question, the acquired TPA businesses get consolidated into the main TPA business because even regulatorily we are responsible for every claim and every policy from the date of acquisition. So the TPA business is a consolidated number across all acquisitions, and the international business is about 4.7% on the revenues for the quarter.
Okay. So on margin front, these businesses, the margins would still be relatively lower to our business margins, right?
I think we take about, and of course when we acquire, like we said, we acquire typically for acceleration of addition of contracts. And these are typically low margin businesses that we acquire. It typically takes us about 4-odd quarters to complete the integration and recover back to our margin profiles. So we are on our way in terms of integrations. So you already see that the Q1 is at a much higher margin than last year's Q1. So obviously our efforts are to get back to our steady state margins that we've exhibited in the past.
Right. I just wanted to understand, on quarter-on-quarter basis, the comparison, if you do comparison, things look a little stark. So is there a seasonality factor that plays there?
I think it's not necessarily seasonality from a volume perspective, but we have a timing on the revenue booking because what we do is, unlike the insurance companies that report the premiums booked in a quarter, we earn a percentage of the premium as our revenue and we distribute the revenue across all 365 days of the policy, and we do this for all the tens of thousands of policies that we serve. So while there is the acquired business or the business that we are running is much higher, the revenues that we actually recognize in a quarter could vary. And just refer you back to one of the earlier questions, we have an item called the contract liability, which is what we defer out to a future period. The net revenue that we had deferred out to a future period as of March was about 220 crores. And that number has now moved up to 265 crores. So it's a revenue that we've acquired, we are servicing, but haven't recognized fully.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for taking the question.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants, anyone who wishes to join the question queue may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. We take the next question from the line of Ashutosh Parashar from Mirables Investment Trust. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good evening, Dr. Neeraj, Satish, and Dr. Vikram Neeraj and Satish. So, wanted to better understand the negotiation that we do with hospitals on the pricing front. and whether it is an ongoing exercise that happens throughout the year, or does it happen annually during the first quarter? And if it has happened already, then what kind of annual inflation in the healthcare prices are we seeing in our network hospitals versus generally the healthcare inflation outside of it?
Thank you, Ashutosh. That's a lot of questions. So I will just try and organize that in a really fashion. One, see, the regulation today allows insurance companies to directly contract with the hospitals, or as MediAssist, like TPAs, we can contract with the hospitals and insurance companies can actually use the same contracts. So our contracting has always been a core focus and a core differentiator for us. That's why today, of the 28 insurers that work with us, 21 of them use our network, and 17 of them exclusively use, you know, our network today. And of course, the negotiation is, I think one can look at it in two ways, right? One, for each claim, you bargain, but two, you have a very structured data-led process with a core focus on managing medical inflation. So we actually use the latter. These are typically multi-year contracts with the hospitals that we sign. They don't necessarily renew every single year or whenever there's a rate chart change. Right? And the second thing that we also do when we contract with the hospitals is also to have simplified billing constructs. Like, we have about 140 surgical procedures that are most frequently used, which have an all-inclusive package kind of a structure with the hospitals, which actually simplifies both billing and also acts as an inflation, you know, control mechanism. Third, we also work very closely with hospitals to simplify their operational processes. About 82% of all interactions that we have with the hospitals, when the patients are still in the hospital or through electronic exchange platforms, they don't need to call us, and they have real-time visibility into what's actually happening. And the fourth that we work very hard towards is to make sure that the promise to pay at the time of discharge is held when the final settlements actually happen to hospitals. So this is a very closely monitored metric at our end, and we work very hard to make sure that the hospitals actually get to the second decimal point before patient leaves the hospital exactly what they are likely to receive from the insurance company that we represent, and we work very hard to make sure that they actually receive that in full. So in summary, if you put all of these things together, we continue to enjoy a favorable inflation rate in our average claim size. Historically, it's been about half of the medical inflation that is reported in the industry. We would be around circa 5%, okay? Which is half of the medical inflation that's reported. I hope that answers your question, Ashutosh.
Yeah, that helps a lot. Thanks. And just a couple of data points that you could help with. What is the contribution of top 5 insurers in our total revenue as of 2024, and the share of non-PSU insurers in our total premium under management?
So are you asking us for the share of public and private sector insurers? Sorry, I just want to make sure I understood your question. So the top 5 insurers contribute 71% today of the premiums. And we have about, I think, 28% of our premiums are from the private sector insurers across the board.
Got it. Thanks. That helps a lot. Thanks a lot. That would be all.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Franklin from Equintis Wealth Advisory. Please go ahead.
Yes, so thanks for taking my question. So what would be the retention rates on Mayfair and Medvantage?
So retention we measure on the group business, because these are annual contracts. Medvantage and Raksha are already subsumed fully into MediAssist. So India TPA business has only one retention metric across acquired and organic portfolios, which has moved up to 94% on premiums this quarter compared to 92% same quarter last year.
Okay.
And
sir, what would be your margin in Q1 of FY23?
We were, I think, far lower margins in Q1.
We can just come back to you with the data point. Do you have any other questions?
Yeah, yeah. So also, you had mentioned about it would take about 4 to 6 quarters, I believe, to restore the EBITDA margins that we had prior to the acquisitions. So are we on track for achieving the same?
I think we've always said that our steady state margins historically were 23 to 24%. I think we believe that's a stable state margin, and our objective is to get back to the stable state margins at the earliest after once we close out the integrations of these acquisitions.
Okay. And so lastly, in terms of, our tax rate, this quarter we've seen some normalized sort of a tax rate. So can we expect this kind of tax rate going forward as well? Or can there be some volatility?
This is Sandeep here. Thanks for the question. Our tax rate, effective tax rate going forward will be in the range of 20% to 22% for the year. We have gotten a few benefits during the last year because of the acquisitions and the losses of the companies which you acquired, which was a one-time benefit. But going forward, it will be around 22% circa.
Okay, sir. Just if you could help me with that last, the question I had asked earlier on the margin.
Yeah, I think the same reason for last year's margin, the 16% would be the comparable EBITDA margin of FY23 Q1.
Sorry, you were asking 23 or 24?
23, Q1 FY23.
So we will get back to you because 23 we were not in a quarterly reporting cycle. So we will give you this information offline if that's okay.
Yeah, that will be fine. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The next question is from the line of Chinmay Nema from Prescient Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi sir, thank you for taking my question. A general question about in the industry and this as well. The take rates, if I compare FY24 from FY20, they have come down. I think the management has previously talked about, attributed this to the product mix between a group and retail and the acquisitions we have done. But could you provide some color on this without taking the impact of acquisitions and the mix? So on a like-to-like basis for similar policies, what has the trend been on take rates over the last 5 or 7 years for the industry?
So maybe just to Fresh, thanks for this question. We get remunerated as a percentage of the premiums that we serve, so we just refer to that as a yield. So our yields, typically, like you rightly said, are dependent on the mix of the policies. If you see pre-COVID, it was predominantly just the base benefits, plain vanilla IP benefits of that are offered by the group customers. Post-COVID, there was a significant spike in the outpatient and flexible benefits. Typically, the nature of these benefits on the outpatient products is that not 100% of the underlying employee base actually participates in it, number one. And second, they're not as fully priced in from a premium and a yield perspective. So from a mix perspective, I think we've seen a few single-digit basis points net change, but we continue to, while we don't publish that metric outside, we continue to internally measure the net realization per life that we manage, and that continues to remain healthy and growing on that perspective. But if I just remove all of the outpatient and the flexible benefits, etc., on the base policies, there has not been too much of a compression on the yields.
Got it.
Chinmay sir, does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Sonal from Prescient Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi sir, this is Sonal Minhas. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, you are.
Yes, sir. If I just emphasize the data, I want to just correct. You mentioned that 28% of your revenues come from private insurers and 72% thereabouts comes from public insurers. Am I correct in understanding that when you were answering somebody in the call?
Yeah, that is excluding the government business. Yes, that's correct.
Yes. Okay, got it, sir. So my question is linked to this, that if you were to just understand the nature of what is it that, let's say, a private insurer is looking for from you compared to a public insurer, or in absolute sense, what is it that is required for us to get a higher share of a public or a private insurer business, what would it be? And just to understand the nature of the customer on the private side, just
No, I think we've, at our scale, we have a fairly common understanding of the insurer's requirement. They remain the same irrespective of public or private, which is basically renewability, annual renewal, the customer experience, and efficient loss control through inflation management on the network side and fraud-based and abuse prevention. So they continue to be a common set of metrics across all of the insurers. We have a fair bit of a group presence, so some of the ultra-large, you know, corporate houses in the country happen to be insured by the public sector's, you know, insurers, so that definitely skews the distribution of premiums in our book. But from purely from account perspective, we work with 28, you know, insurance companies across the country, and we work with almost half of them on the retail front. So I wouldn't necessarily attribute this to the requirements being different or you know, our service models being different.
Yeah, just to add, this is Vikram. I think there is no, in our service definition and in our contracting or partnership definition with insurers, we really don't see this as a public versus private. Our business in the numbers that you have just heard mimic the natural distribution of business between public and private insurers. While in some sectors, public insurers continue to dominate the space, and in others, they do not. So we reflect and mimic that, and it's not really an impact of the nature of contracting or a need that a private insurer versus a public insurer have. I think the needs remain exactly the same.
Got it, sir. That answers my question. Thanks a lot for answering. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take that as the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Neeraj Didwani for closing comments.
We thank everybody for their active participation on this call. We are available offline to address any questions with respect to the business and financials. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, members of the management. On behalf of Medi Assist Healthcare Services Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.